This is Barron's Live. Each weekday, we bring you live conversations from our newsrooms about what's moving the market right now. On this podcast, we take you inside those conversations, the stories, the ideas, and the stocks to watch so you can invest smarter. Now, let's dial in.
Hello, and welcome to Barron's Live, our daily webcast and podcast. I'm Lauren Rublin, Senior Managing Editor of Barron's. Thanks for joining us today to talk about the week ahead in stocks. I'll be speaking with Barron's Deputy Editor, Ben Levison, who's just back from a week's vacation. Lucky Ben. The bull market doesn't believe in vacations, it seems. It barely takes a day off these days. The Dow Industrials are up about 8% year to date. The S&P 500 has gained 7%. The NASDAQ Composite is ahead 4.5%, and the small cap Russell 2000 has risen more than 14% in 2021. This morning, major averages were all up well over 1%, bolstered by Friday's blowout jobs report. I'm back, baby, the U.S. economy seems to be saying. Ben, what do you make of the market strength, and what do you make of the economy's strength?
Well, let's start with the economy, because I just think these numbers are fantastic. And it's not just jobs. I mean, the jobs number, they had not over 900,000 jobs created last month, which is fantastic. There's even talk that it could go even higher. That I think it was an economist at B of A was talking about a 2 million job print in the future, in the near future.
Get back to full employment soon.
Yeah, I mean, my guess, and it's just a guess, and that being said, I'll probably be wrong, but my guess is that we hit pre-pandemic levels before the end of this year. I just see that there's so many jobs coming back. We just got our we keep getting economic data like the ISM manufacturing last week that came in extremely high. We're just seeing the economy starting to fire in a way that it hasn't. The checks are starting to go out have gone out from the most recent stimulus package. They're talking about more. This is just going, it has been and will continue to be an incredible recovery from a recession, especially when you compare it to the financial crisis, which if you look at certain aspects of it, including the job market, never really recovered all that well. The labor market participation rate, I don't think, got back to pre-financial crisis levels. So this is a very different kind of recovery than we're used to.
So I have two questions for you. Are we overstimulating, number one? And number two, is this why the stock market has been so robust?
I do think it is why the stock market has been so robust. I know the Fed gets a lot of credit for the market's rally, and it deserves at least some of that credit. But the fiscal stimulus that has been enacted has just been incredible. And I think that more than anything is what's helping the market, and if the economy is going to have a sustained recovery, that's what's going to be the trigger for it. It's the companies are going to take the money that they have on their balance sheets and spend it, and that's going to help create something that is more sustained than just creating an environment like the Fed did during the financial crisis, where it made more sense to to borrow money and buy back shares and to actually grow the business. And maybe we could see something different happen in the months and years ahead.
That would be exciting. So speaking of stimulus, last week when you were away, President Biden unveiled his infrastructure plan. If passed into law, it should stimulate a lot of growth. Barron's had two stories this past weekend about the variety of companies likely to benefit. That's everything from electric vehicle charging station providers like ChargePoint Holdings and Blink Charging to industrials and material stocks and green energy funds. What's your take on the infrastructure package?
Going to go with Al Root's favorite word for just about everything, but I'm going to say it's complicated.
that's not fair. Come on.
I know. there's a lot going on there. And there really is this offset between spending on the one hand and taxes on the other. I think the first thing we have to assume is that taxes won't go as high as the plan has. And so it was talking a 28% corporate tax rate, that kind of thing, probably won't go that high. I don't think the spending will be high. It will be as high as they're hoping either. But UBS did a really good analysis of the package and kind of trying to look at the possibilities that could come out of it. And for them, the biggest thing is what would happen. It is not just you get spending, but that you actually get consistent spending even past the 8 years that are put into the bill, or that are in the plan. And so what they noted is that government spending has actually been below trend for a while. And what they would like to see, they said, for this to really be meaningful, would be to have the money that have government spending remain about 3% higher than it was before the pandemic, after all the spending is done, after like the first set of spending is done at the end of 8 years. And if that happens, there's actually a lot of potential growth for the economy and for the market. And that would be the best thing that could happen. But you know, it's hard to know if it is possible. It's even hard to know what kind of bill, if any, is going to be passed. And I think that's one of the things that does, and I apologize, it does really make it complicated to sort of try to game out right now, is because, you know, we know that the Republicans are opposed to it, though they've started to talk about, okay, well, if we keep it just to infrastructure and it's one third of the size, then maybe we can go along with it. And so there's going to be a lot of back and forth, and it's just going to take a little time for us to really get a sense of where it's going.
Well, I guess I would consider it an opening bid. But right. The message, if I'm reading between the lines properly, is stick with the market, stick with stocks, because the economy is going to get better.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. And even something like, you know, the tax hikes, that's, you know, it's if that goes through, that's going to have an impact. The good news on that, I guess, if you can call it good news, is that, you know, Goldman Sachs has pointed out that when President Trump cut taxes, the market didn't react at all until about a month before the passage of the bill. And they expect the same kind of thing this time, that you won't get a reaction until it gets very close to the passage of the bill. And by that point, we should have a better idea of what's in it. What's also interesting is that you are seeing the firms try to game out who gets hurt and who gets helped. And from the tax side of things, you see UBS points to, it's going to be tech, communication services, financials, which have been a popular one, consumer discretionary and healthcare, that are going to have the most the largest hit to earnings per share by about 7 to 8%. But it's going to be energy, materials, industrials, and staples that are going to have the least impact. But the other is this tax that they have out there, that they want to get companies that don't pay a lot of tax on foreign revenues. It's called the Global Intangible Low Taxed Income. And it's called, or GILTI, and that it's going to be the companies that have the most exposure to that are going to get hit the hardest. And they came up with stocks that are going to get hit by that, but also not benefit from spending. And that includes things like Activision, Chipotle, Amgen, and, you know, everybody's favorite, Apple.
So that doesn't sound so wonderful for these companies.
Right. And it does point to, you know, having to be maybe a little more creative in the kinds of stocks that we buy, and favoring a little less what had worked before.
Mm-hmm. So many sectors have rallied already in anticipation of some sort of an infrastructure bill. Ed Yardeni noted last week that the S&P 500 steel index, when was the last time you thought about the steel index, was up 51% year to date. The agricultural and farm machinery index was up 39%, and the copper index was up 25%. So that begs the question, is the rally over for a lot of beneficiaries of an economic revival, and then for value stocks generally?
I don't think so. When it comes to a lot of the things that have worked well, if the United States is able to grow at a much higher rate than it has, and that growth then becomes something that helps drive the global economy in a way that the United States hasn't done in quite a while, you could see those kind of sectors continue to do well. Though after gains like that, you always need to, you'd always like to see them take a break. I always get terrified buying things after they've gone up 50%.
And you should,
but it's the kind of thing that if you do get this a global synchronized recovery, which people are still talking about as a possibility, driven by the U.S., then these kind of things will do well. One of the things, though, with value is that there's a lot of different kinds of value. People measure it in different ways. Some of it has been, traditional value, which is basically price to book. But you also have another kind of value is buying the stocks that are most volatile. They're usually very low quality and not great companies. And what we're seeing now, at least according to Morgan Stanley, but you see it if you look at some of the ETFs as well, is that the most volatile stocks aren't performing quite as well as they did before. They really had a run there where everyone was just buying like, hey, let's buy the junkiest stocks we can. And that's starting to change a bit. And you actually end up with more high quality traditional value stocks that are doing well. Some of those are actually fairly low volatility, and so don't feel as risky. And that's something that hadn't done well before. So I think there's room within within value for it to continue doing well, particularly because so much of the growth trade has just gotten overpriced and remains overpriced relative to value, even following value's recent outperformance.
So speaking of value, I wanted to talk for a moment about gold, which has had a tough year. It's down about 9% to $1,730 an ounce, possibly because some of the people who had bet on gold in the past as a hedge against uncertainty are now loading up on Bitcoin, which is kind of an interesting trade. Our colleague Andrew Barry wrote in this past weekend's Barron's that he thinks gold could regain its glow and that Barrick Gold is one of the world's largest producers, looks very cheap at a recent $20 a share. It trades for just 15 times estimated earnings. Do you have a positive view of gold as well, or do you think the price is where it should be?
I think for now, gold is probably where it should be, but I do have a fairly positive view on it. I mean, one is that that gold it looked there for a bit like it was ready to really break down pretty hard.
Yes,
and I mean it rallied up to I think 2100 very quickly. As the Fed started doing its thing back in the middle of 2020-ish, that period of time, the dollar weakened strongly and gold rallied very strongly. And then you saw some of that dollar weakness, dollar started going sideways, and that's when gold started pulling back. And it kept testing around 1700, a little bit below that, but it's pretty much held its own since then. It's been going kind of sideways. If you look back though over a 1 year period for gold, it's actually up still 5%, with the dollar down 8%. And if you look over 2 years, it's up 33% with the dollar down 5%. So I think that gold has had quite a run. Probably needs a break of some sort. But if the dollar weakens, I think gold starts doing well again. And when it comes to Barrick, that Andrew is a big fan of, I mean, it's amazing what gold miners, that just the change in these companies over the last 10 to 15 years. Remember when I started at Barrick, these companies were just terrible. They couldn't cover the cost of production. The prices were so low, and they were just not careful with their cash. And they've all shifted to being much more focused on returning cash to shareholders, to running the companies in a very focused kind of way. And I think because of that, they're much better investments. And Barrick in particular, as Andrew pointed out, at around $20 a share or 15 times is an interesting one to look at.
There's also been consolidation in the gold market, which takes out some of the weaker players.
That's right.
Makes us stronger. So it's an interesting area for sure.
I mean, that's one of the most fascinating things about Barrick is to see that it first had, when this whole process started for it, they had, I think, a former Goldman Sachs guy who was really focused on capital allocation. And then they merged, I think it was with Randgold.
With Randgold, yeah.
And let a guy who really knew the gold market took over then. But with that continued focus on capital allocation. And it's just a much better company than it was 10 to 15 years ago.
Be great to see this in a lot of industries, for sure. So we've got the quarter having just ended. We've got earnings season around the corner. So let's switch to earnings for a moment. We have a handful of companies that are reporting quarterly results this week. The bulk, of course, will start next week. But let's take a look at some of the bigger names reporting this week. Let's start with Conagra, the food producer. What's the outlook there?
Well, they're supposed to have 58 cents a share. That would be up from 47 cents 1 year ago. And that was for a period when COVID and the stocking up was just starting. And the stock is doing okay. It's gained 4.3% during the past 3 months. So that's about half the S&P's 8.4%, a little more than that. But, you know, they're really trying to hold on to the gains that they've made because of COVID. Trying to keep the customers that had started buying their products. And B of A, for one, is very, very positive about the stock. They think that the company, and we're going to hear this theme over and over again, but they think the company is actually going to be able to pass on higher prices to consumers, they're going to find cost savings and be able to maintain their margins. And I think that's going to be one of the things that people are listening for, and not just from Conagra, but from others. But can you maintain your earnings, and can you even in the face of rising prices? I'm looking at Conagra. It's kind of gone sideways for a while now, but if it can start showing, especially with its guidance that it expects to be able to do these things, it's probably got room to go up, especially if people start looking a little more towards the staples that have kind of been left behind for a while now. It could be a beneficiary there. So I'd be feeling kind of good about this one heading into earnings.
All right. Well, that's Conagra. That's food. So after food comes drink. Let's talk about Constellation Brands.
You know, it's they're kind of the opposite story. Their earnings are supposed to come in about $1.52, and that would be down from $2.18 a year ago. But the stock has actually been doing better recently. It's up 7% during the past 3 months. JP Morgan had an interesting view on the stock because they expect the company to miss earnings estimates. But they also see the focus as being on 2022. They're going to does the company have an ability to really give guidance, to talk about what the future is going to look like, and maybe even talk about buybacks and some growth there. So those are the kind of things that will be in focus when Constellation reports. But again, it's all about this guidance looking out, because I think everyone kind of expects, the numbers are going to be good right now. And it's just about the sustainability of those earnings. Are you going to get a one-time pop from COVID, or is there something more that's really transformed the company and allowed it to do even better going forward?
That's a good point. We have one more I wanted to talk about, and that's Levi Strauss, the apparel maker, the jeans maker, mostly.
Yeah. Clothing has not done well, mainly because I'm not sure anyone has actually bought clothes in the last year. We're all sitting.
No one I know.
And there hasn't been any need to buy new pants because no one's seeing those anyway. So we can wear our old jeans. I know the jeans I'm wearing right now actually have a rip in the pocket. I would never wear them into the office. But, when I'm sitting at a desk and no one can see me, or certainly no one can see below my waist, then, you know, these jeans are fine.
Mostly you have to look gorgeous above the shoulders.
That's right. What's amazing, though, is the stock is up 20% during the past 3 months. Investors are clearly seeing better times ahead. And, you know, that's what UBS was looking at. They did some surveys. They see that the brand is strong. It's gaining momentum. But they're actually a little bit nervous heading into the earnings because Europe is still a problem. And Levi's is a big brand in Europe. It gets a lot of its does a lot of its business there. And with Europe still in shutdown mode and things not going well, they really do worry that Levi's, and it's not even about the number itself, but Levi's is not going to be able to see whether, it's not going to have enough visibility to actually talk about guidance in a way that is going to give people confidence. So they're not expecting much from the earnings report.
All right. I want to move on to the earnings reports that are coming. Before I do, I want to remind people we will take questions at the end of the call. We have a bunch already, but if you've got other questions on your mind, please type them in now. So the big banks usually kick off earnings reporting season, and we're going to be hearing from them next week. What do you expect to hear about the quarter just passed, and what do you think they'll be discussing in the guidance portion of the releases and conference calls?
I mean, I think this is their time where they really have to start. It's no longer them being given the benefit of the doubt. Our reporter Carlton English talked about this recently, where she pointed out that, you know, everyone expected really bad things to happen to the banks when the pandemic started. Just lots of bad loans from businesses and consumers and whatnot. But that's not really what happened. They've actually seemed to have emerged from this in a very strong position and are really ready to go back to, you know, paying dividends and doing buybacks and all these things that that they used to do before. And I think the market has now come around to the to understanding just how strong the banks have emerged from the pandemic recession. I think now, though, it's really time for them to kind of, you know, show that they have the ability to keep growing. Bond yields have risen, so net interest margins should be better, but can they keep growing even if bond yields stay here, which is, you know, around 1.75%? Are they more than just a yield trade? And I think that's what is really going to be in the focus. The other thing that they have to show is that what's going to happen with their capital markets business, because we had a lot of volatility. And those businesses, even last quarter, I think those businesses weren't supposed to do very well, and they did do well. Are they going to continue to do well now? Or is there going to be a bigger, you know, are they going to be able to do that? Or is it going to be something where capital markets falls off and they're going to have to make it up elsewhere?
We'll find out soon enough. So one question about Facebook, then we'll go to some listener questions. We won't be hearing from Facebook from an earnings perspective for a while, but Barron's readers actually learned a lot about the company this past weekend in a cover story by Max Chirney. He argued that Facebook stock could be worth 20% more than the current price if the company's various parts, that includes Instagram and Messenger and other parts, command the same valuation as various peers. Facebook has lagged the market in the past 6 months. What's your take on Facebook? Do you think it's attractive, and how does it compare with the other big techs?
Yeah, I think it is really interesting right now. If you look at it, the stock it peaked in September, and went sideways since then until now. It just broke out, and I think it actually hit a new all-time high today, or would be a new all-time high if it can close here. It's having a spectacular day. It's more economically exposed than people think, just because of its exposure to advertising. That, you know, companies need to want to spend on advertising. They have to feel comfortable enough that there are consumers out there to benefit from those ads. And so, if the economy keeps improving, that ad revenue should be better. And then Eric also laid out all these, you know, different arguments about just the sum of the parts there.
Max.
Or I'm sorry, Max did. that, you know, the sum of the parts of the company, where you have Instagram, you have Facebook, you have all these different things. Some you can value, some you can't, but it all points to the company being worth more than the market has been given credit for. And it's not terribly expensive. I mean, people talk about expensive tech. That's not Facebook.
But I understand you like Google quite a bit too.
I do. This was a pick that I had on the Barron's Roundtable, the TV show, a few weeks back. And in many ways, it was the same kind of story as Facebook. Here was a stock that, didn't do so well, but instead of peaking in September, it didn't go up as much. It pulled back, and then it just kind of kept trending up, and it would go sideways, and then some news would come out and it would pop up a bit, and then it would go sideways. And I was looking at this as tech was selling off a lot, and it's just the thing, and looking at Alphabet, and the stock wasn't going anywhere, even though the NASDAQ was falling, all its FANG peers were falling, and it stuck out as a stock that it was worth watching, and it's now started to break out today. I think Morgan Stanley added it to its focus list, and again, you have the advertising story that is such a big part of things for Google, even bigger than Facebook. So I think that's a pretty great stock, though it has broken out a bit already, but it's certainly something to watch.
Well, thanks for that insight, Ben. I just want to mention, for those who might have missed the reference, Ben is one of the stars of Barron's Roundtable. This is our Friday night television show on Fox Business. I had to give you a plug there, Ben.
Yeah, and I'm going to say I'm one of the stars. I know. the stars sit to my right and left and across from me.
I think you're pretty good. So let's go to some listener questions. And we actually had a question about big tech stocks. Ron asks, when do you expect the rotation from COVID cyclicals back into tech stocks?
That is a good question. I'm not sure. I don't see it being quite the same kind of trade that it was during the past 10 years, say. I see it when growth starts to slow, that's when you're going to see a shift out of cyclical. And it's not even that growth has to be bad. It's just we're going to start. I mean, ISMs, when they're coming in the 60s, it's hard to keep that kind of growth going in those kind of indexes. So I think when we start to see the rate of growth slow is when cyclicals start to perform not as well. But I also don't think that we're going to go back to the same kind of growth trade that we had before, that it's going to play out differently. And that's why I highlighted the Morgan Stanley call on quality stocks, because I think that might be the way that it plays out a little bit more, that you're really going to want companies that are well run, that can really leverage the possible, that can handle higher prices that may be coming through and still be profitable, and those kind of things. I don't think it's going to be the same kind of maybe some of the speculative tech that did so well. It's just going to play out in a different kind of way.
We had a question about small cap growth stocks. Uday asks, can you talk about small cap growth and their expected performance?
I'm not an expert there. One of the things that has stood out, though, is that, for a while they were really left behind, to the point that I believe the valuations between small growth and small value had narrowed considerably. And so that would make small growth a little more attractive than it had been. Small in general has run so far that actually scares me a little bit. And I'm actually, can I plug a future guest, Lord?
Absolutely.
I mean, I know we're going to have a small cap manager on in a future call to talk about how you manage that kind of environment where small cap has just outperformed everything by massive margins. And that's where I want to hear how this manager is managing through that kind of environment.
I do too. As we mentioned earlier in the call, the Russell 2000 is up 14% this year. That's a tremendous rally for small cap stocks. It's been quite an area of interest in the market. All right, Ben, now I'm going to put you on the spot. Jolie asks, should we allocate some money to crypto? You want to touch that one?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, it's one of those things that I do think is speculative, but I also don't think that there's necessarily harm in owning it as long as it's not a huge portion of a portfolio. I don't think there's enough history to know how it's going to perform over the long run. As an asset class, or even, you know, any of the single coins themselves, what drives them, we just don't know. So I think counting on them for, you know, counting on them to be a portfolio diversifier in a kind of traditional way gets very hard. I think it's an interesting speculative bet, though it was certainly more interesting, you know, when it was trading at 10,000 and not 60 or wherever it is now. I think it's close to 60,000 at this point. You know, it's just one of those things that if you can afford to, and you know, you feel like this might be something to have in the portfolio, great, but just be ready to recognize, I think, just with anything, that you know, you could lose a huge portion of that money. And because they don't have a cash flow like a company does, that they and also might come a time when it doesn't bounce back either.
Well, what drives it is the expectation that somebody else will pay more for it in the absence of a cash flow situation, as you described. So I think speculative and bet were the operative words in what you said. But thank you. We had a question about the oil patch from Hal. Is the oil patch's rough patch over for now?
Yeah, I think that as long as oil prices stabilize, and it looks like they have, then this looks more like a consolidation than the beginning of a big pullback. I mean, oil stocks have been just destroyed over the last 10 years or so, to the point where if you were a portfolio manager, you didn't even have to worry about whether you were going to own any of them or not. It got to be such a small part of the S&P 500. You could basically ignore it.
3% at the worst.
Right. And that also means that nobody, that if someone decides to own it, even just a little bit of money coming into the sector, it makes a big difference. So I think this looks more like consolidation right now than it does like the end of the run. That being said, I've been wrong on oil over and over and over again. But I'm glad to see it, the price of oil stabilizing around 60. And that has to be good for particularly the well-run oil companies.
And it's consistent. The rally is somewhat consistent with the notion of an improving economy.
And that it is.
So it does all make sense. All right. Last question comes from Debbie. When does the large increase in the national debt start to affect the price of stocks?
I wish I knew.
That's the $1 million question.
And it's $1 trillion question.
Right.
Well said. It is. I don't know. You know, the debt is huge, but growth is coming as well. And if you get growth plus inflation, then maybe that debt as it stands right now doesn't matter. If you don't get the growth, at some point it does. I mean, I think you combine demographics, you combine large debt and things like that. It does start to impact stocks, and it impacts the economy as well. Just more money having to go to pay off debt. I'm not a huge believer in the in MMT, that you could just keep printing money and paying for what you want, and that everything works out okay. I'd like to think that we have to be a little more responsible than that. But depending on things, we may find out.
Well, that's going to be one of the big questions of coming years. Anyway, we've covered a lot of ground today, and I want to thank you, Ben. Really appreciate it. And
thank you,
I thank our listeners for tuning in. Tomorrow, Barron's Associate Editor and Tech Trader columnist Eric Savitz we'll discuss the state of the computer hardware market with Katie Huberty, a managing director and head of technology research at Morgan Stanley. Huberty will provide her thoughts on Apple, Dell, HP, and other important tech companies. So we had some tech today, more tomorrow. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in. Thanks again, Ben, for your thoughts. And stay well, everyone. Have a good day.